Because, you know, you were doing something and then you were doing something else.
Got it. You ready?
Yep.
This is the Doers. This is the Doers Podcast.
Do it.
I love that you're doing that.
I do what I do.
Conversations with creators,
innovators,
and entrepreneurs from Lancaster and the Central Pennsylvania region.
These are the people who make Central PA a great place
to live, work, and play.
Start again.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today on the program, it's Dr. Andrew Coco. Dr. Coco practiced medicine for 34 years before retiring at the end of 2019. The last 20 years of his career were spent with Lancaster General Health's Comprehensive Care, a primary care practice for adults and children diagnosed with HIV, as well as transgender individuals. Comprehensive Care was born out of federal legislation that was named after a teenage boy named Ryan White.
He was diagnosed with HIV in 1984.
Ryan's diagnosis followed a blood transfusion, which was a treatment for hemophilia. In 1990, Congress enacted the Ryan White Care Act, which provides funding for comprehensive care and programs like it around the country.
So we're all HIV specialists, but we're family doctors by training.
Dr. Coco joined Comprehensive Care shortly after its creation in the late 90s and has remained with the practice ever since, adding physicians along the way who have had a particular interest in learning more about HIV.
We provide, you know, primary care, and then that includes, since we're HIV specialists, that includes, you know, treating all aspects of the HIV infection. But we're also the primary care doctors.
While the social stigma of HIV remains and there has never been a cure for the virus, medication developed in the mid-90s have dramatically improved the quality of life for individuals who are HIV positive.
But we can, with the medications, you know, completely suppress the virus to the point where, you know, people are just no longer contagious at all.
Dr. Andrew Coco dedicated the majority of his career to comprehensive care in Lancaster. You can learn more about the program online at Lancaster General's website, lancastergeneralhealth.org. Links to the specific practice can be found on the show post.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Brought to you by the Candy Factory.
Co-working in Lancaster.
I don't know if you've heard of Ryan White.
This is Dr. Andrew Coco.
There was this, I think he was a 12-year-old boy who had hemophilia and so needed to get a lot of blood product transfusions, you know, to stay alive. All hemophiliacs do. But anyway, he was diagnosed with HIV in 1984.
Wow.
You know, in I believe it was Indiana. I'm pretty sure it was Kokomo, Indiana, I think. And anyway, that's 1984 is around the time they first developed a test where they knew there was this virus out
Something
there,
but
they actually you know, developed this diagnostic test. And so they tested all the hemophiliacs. He got tested. It's my understanding it was a pretty small town, Kokomo, Indiana. I don't know anything about it, but anyway, once they found out he had HIV, the school like didn't want him to keep attending the school because there was so much, you know, paranoia that he could infect
right.
other kids, and he really wanted to keep going to school and just, you know, live his life and stuff. And so his parents had to really fight, you know, legal battles to get him to, you know, keep attending school, and they were finally successful. I think it took a while, but anyway, then I think he lived another maybe 5 years and, you know, died when he was a teenager. But through going through all this, and I guess enough, you know, local, you know, Congress people heard about it, they actually set up this whole federal program called the Ryan White Act. And they call it CARE. I forget exactly what that stands for, but it started out as the Ryan White Act. And that provides funding for over 100 clinics across the country to help people with HIV just get better treatment. So anyway, we got funding through them starting in 1999. And that's really when the comprehensive care medicine started, I would say, in 1999. I started a year later in, I think, around 2000. It was started by one of my colleagues, Jeff Kirkner, another family doctor, who just had a real intense interest in this. But anyway, they kind of, I guess, strongly, it might have been mandated, strongly suggested that we use this word comprehensive care medicine. They didn't want HIV, or, you know, they were trying to get away from the stigma. So then we called it comprehensive care medicine. And
we intentionally
avoided, you know, saying anything about HIV because there was still so much stigma, and, you know, still is, around the whole disease. So.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Visit us online at coworkinginlancaster.com.
Home of the Candy Factory. A co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I believe there's 6 part-time physicians, and the medical director now is, his name is Adam Lake. He's a family doctor. All the physicians are family doctors, and they were all trained through the Lancaster General residency program. And Jeff Kirchner, who actually was the medical director most of the time. I've never been the director. I guess I've been like a staff physician. But it was the two of us, just the two of us for quite a while, maybe the first 10 years. And then we started grooming residents who had an interest. And then we trained them over the last 2 years of their three-year residency. And we had them come over and see patients for a couple of years. And then they were able to, when we had more patient volume than we could handle, the two of us, we took them on as part-time physicians too, and they became certified as HIV specialists through the American Academy of HIV Medicine. So we're all HIV specialists, but we're family doctors by training.
What particularly does this unit do for a patient?
Most of our patients, probably 80 to 85% are HIV positive. As family doctors, we still had some other patients that wanted to stay with us when we transitioned to this, about 20 years ago. So we do have some non-HIV patients, but we provide, primary care. And then that includes, since we're HIV specialists, that includes, treating all aspects of the HIV infection. But we're also the primary care doctors. Before the term medical home became, like groovy, and stuff, we had a medical home because we really believed in that. We created one and for these people that were HIV positive. And any issue they had, we either, treated it if it was a rash or, a musculoskeletal problem, we treated that. A lot of psychiatric problems we treated. I have a lot of people with bipolar disorder. There's a dearth of psychiatrists, in Lancaster County, in most areas, actually. It doesn't pay that well. So I think there's a national shortage of psychiatrists. So we took care of everything. We take care of pregnant women that are HIV positive and, treat them with the medication so their babies don't get infected. And I would say, over the 20 years, we probably had, maybe 50 to 75 pregnant women were HIV positive. We treated them during the pregnancy and none of the babies got infected. Wow. If they take their medications, that's what should happen.
If women
are taking their medications, there's only about a 1% chance their baby will get infected. So, but we never had a positive baby, which we're very proud of.
And, absolutely.
And the women are, obviously extremely relieved about when women are pregnant, that maternal instinct kicks in, even if it's their first time. And we had some women that were not very good about taking their medications because 20 years ago, the medication regimens were very complicated, a lot of side effects and stuff. But when they got pregnant, that maternal instinct kicked in and they were just right on it and none of the babies got infected.
Yeah, so that was great
for everybody. Yeah.
So a patient who becomes infected, they would be referred into that program? Is that how it worked?
Some people had a family doc that they'd had for years, and they could stay with them, and we would just be like their specialist for HIV. As a family doc, we never got to be specialists. We always referred to specialists, but as family docs, we actually got to be specialists, and so that was kind of cool for us. We got a bit of an inferiority complex, but anyway. Yeah.
Does it go away, or when you're infected, you're infected?
Yeah, there's no cure for it. I think there's been two patients that actually been cured, but they had types of leukemia where they needed to get bone marrow transplants. And so by taking out all their bone marrow and giving them new bone marrow, they actually got cured. There was a patient in Berlin, I think it was like 15 or 20 years ago. And I think there's another one I heard about recently. But, essentially there's no cure. But we can, with the medications, completely suppress the virus to the point where people are just no longer contagious at all. That includes if you had someone who was taking their medications, even though they're HIV positive, and they've been taking them every day for, maybe at least a year or so, and they were, with either married or with someone who was HIV negative, they could have unprotected sex without condoms or anything, and that uninfected partner would not get infected. They could have, they'd have sex three or four times a week, whatever the average is, and you just don't even have to worry about it. Yeah, it's just the virus is completely suppressed. There's no viral particles in their circulation at all. But they're not cured though. I mean, it's
right.
We call them undetectable. We can't find any virus. But
my knowledge, coming up through high school in the 80s, it was this epidemic, right? It breaks out, and I remember, doing current events research through Newsweek and different periodicals because of this epidemic, and it was frightening. It was a frightening time to go into college in terms of a sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely, yeah.
When did the medication catch up?
The medication, it's typically a combination of three medications. The virus is so tricky, you need three medications to fully suppress it. But those effective regimens, which were called, you know, highly effective antiretroviral treatment, or HART, H-A-A-R-T. That was about 1995 when they first,
okay.
I mean, the epidemic started, I think, around 81, and then it took until 84 till they could really diagnose it. And so it took, you know, almost, 14 years before they got really effective medications.
Okay.
During the 80s, as was well portrayed in that movie Dallas Buyers Club with Matthew McConaughey that came out maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But anyway, the only medication they had was something called AZT. And because it was only one medication, it really only temporarily killed off the virus for maybe a few months. And then, you know, it just rebounded and it really wasn't doing anything. But that's all they had for, I'd say, maybe between 88 and 95 for 7 years or so.
And then in 95, that's when you saw the show.
Yeah, they started getting these combinations and they figured out that if you take three of them, you can fully suppress it. So there's no more HIV viral particles in the circulation. And now the, you know, in the last 20 years, the medications have just been getting better. You know, there's, you take one pill a day and it has the three medications, you know, sandwiched into one pill, hardly any side effects. I mean, just hardly any interactions with other medications. I mean, it's really become, you know, it's like taking a vitamin pill every day and you're not going to get sick from, you know, having a weak immune system. You're probably going to, you can't infect anyone else. And you're probably going to live your normal lifespan.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, the big problem now is still the social stigma, which is still huge. I mean, you know, even though people have gotten to this point where they're healthy, they know they're going to live, they still, like, I still feel like damaged goods. Who the hell would want to be with me, you know? And so it's, you know,
right.
It's still a big deal in that way. But
this is the Doers Podcast, conversations with
creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs
from all around Central Pennsylvania.
You mentioned you were a family doctor.
Family doctor, yeah.
How long had you been practicing prior to joining the unit?
I finished medical school in 1986, University of Massachusetts. I started a little late, so I was around 35 when I, no, I'm sorry, no, 32 when I finished medical school, and then I had to do a three-year residency out in California to become a certified family doctor. That was in 1989, so I was a family doctor practicing for, you know, about 10 or 11 years before I got into the HIV area.
What was it that drew you to it? What was your interest?
I think it was a combination of, I knew there was going to be a lot of psychological issues to deal with, and I really like getting into that stuff. I like listening to people and, you know, kind of being a mirror for them so that they can hopefully deal with their own problems better. I have a natural tendency for that. And then also I like the science behind it. I have a very analytical mind. And when I realized, you know, like in 95, these medications came out where we could actually control this. There's blood tests that you can do to see that it's under control. I really liked, you know, I mean, this is a very effective treatment. In a lot of areas of medicine, you're making your best guess. And with a lot of chronic diseases, you don't really cure people. You just try to keep them, you know, as healthy as they can be. But this, you could actually, even though you couldn't cure it, you could fully suppress it. And if they had been infected for a number of years and lost a lot of weight, were really, you know, kind of failing to thrive, with these medications, you could get them back to a normal, healthy state and keep them there. And so that was very, you know.
That's very fulfilling.
Yeah, very fulfilling. Yeah, I mean, it was like, wow. And then that in combination with all the psychosocial issues, it was just a good match for me. So
was it a tough transition?
Not really. I mean, since I was a, you know, already established family doctor, I mean, I had to spend probably about 6 months learning the medications. I went to Johns Hopkins and, you know, spent some time with some infectious disease doctors down there and, you know, went to conferences and, you know, read a lot. And so, but it wasn't, I mean, this wasn't like a full-time thing. I did it, you know, over 6 months, but it wasn't that hard. You know, there's so much the stuff that you already have the background in that it wasn't that bad.
Right. Are patients tested for HIV across the board if you're in for something else, or is it a specific thing like, we think that this might be
it? It's a CDC recommendation, and it has been for at least 5 years, for everybody between age 13 and 64 to get tested at least once in their life, because, you know, you don't know through past sexual contacts, whatever. That's the recommendation. Family doctors are supposed to do that. I think the percentage of times it happens is still quite small, though. I don't think most people, when they go to their family doctor, it's ever brought up. I mean, I would say that would be more likely.
That's true. Yeah. Thinking back over the last 20 or 30 years, I've never, you know, met a new doctor or started seeing a new doctor, and they said, You might want to check it for HIV.
Yeah, and that recommendation came out, maybe between 5 and 8 years ago. So before then, yeah.
Okay.
But even since then, these recommendations come out. There's so many of them that, honestly, if we tried to follow every recommendation put out by all these, organizations, guidelines and everything, we just wouldn't have time to do anything else. So a lot of them don't get done, even though they're well-intended.
Yeah. Is comprehensive care HIV specific?
It's pretty much HIV specific. We still get, I don't know the exact amount anymore. Originally, I think we got around $300,000 a year from this Ryan White program. It's probably more than that, but since I haven't been medical director, I don't know the budget details. But anyway, we still get that money, and we have to use that money to take care of people that are HIV positive. But in the last couple of years, we have started treating transgender people. They don't have to be HIV positive, although they could. But one of the doctors, the current medical director, Adam Lake, has become specialized in providing people with the hormonal therapy they need to transition, whatever transition they're making, gotcha. Either way. So,
are there comprehensive cares in other cities? I mean, is this a common model?
Yeah, through this Ryan White program, there's at least 100 around the country, probably quite a few more, and they all have the same sort of model. Since we're getting federal money, there's a lot of requirements that we have to follow to keep getting the grant funding. And
sure.
So the model's pretty similar in a lot of places, yeah.
You're listening to The Doers Podcast, brought to you by The Candy Factory,
a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Visit us online
at coworkinginlancaster.com.
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 I'm Jason Mundock, talking today with Dr. Andrew Coco, a recently retired family physician from Lancaster who spent 20 years of a 34-year career caring for individuals who are HIV positive. Talk to me about some of the impact that this comprehensive care has had on patients in Lancaster.
I mean, one guy that came to mind, actually, he's a musician. I think he still performs, at least part-time locally. But he got infected with HIV the same way Magic Johnson did. And most people, when they hear about HIV, they know Magic Johnson, who I think he got diagnosed in 90 or 91. And
yeah,
something like that. Unfortunately, he was still healthy. And when the medications came out in 95, he got treated. And he's still doing fine now. But anyway, this guy... he's a musician, handsome guy, a lot of groupies in his 20s, performing at colleges or whatever, had a lot of sex, heterosexual sex, and got infected unbeknownst to him,
Sure.
Just had a lot of women coming up to him. And, he told me, Dr. Coco, I couldn't resist, Yeah, it's quite a problem to have, whatever. But when I met him, he was around 35 and he had been sick for about 6 months. Is a really... well-built guy, lifts weights up, but I think he lost like 75 or 100 pounds or something.
Wow.
It was a waste. In a way. Had seen a lot of specialists. No one knew what he had because he didn't really have any of the risk factors for HIV. He wasn't gay, never used injection drugs, didn't have any transfusions or anything. And then, he'd been monogamous for a while now. This was back in his 20s when he was, a man about town. And so anyway, no one thought to test him. And finally, someone did, and they realized he's HIV positive and referred him to me. And his immune system was almost completely trashed. It's called a CD4 count. It's a blood test, and we can tell how much your immune system has been damaged. And his was like close to being depleted, that part of his immune system. I remember he came in with his girlfriend at the time and, thought he was going to die. He felt like he was dying. And then, just through, talking to him, encouraging him, he started taking his medications. Now, I don't think he's ever missed a pill. Probably like 15 or 20 years later, gained all his weight back. He's, working full-time, totally healthy,
That's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's just amazing. Since I retired last month, I remember I saw him in December and saying goodbye to me. He said, I'll always think of you as saving my life, even though it was really the pills. But, we just had a bond over the years and stuff. And so it was just, this is a young, healthy guy who got his life back completely.
Considering where HIV was in those first 10, 15 years that we knew about it.
Yeah, yeah.
To hear that story now, 30 years later, that's remarkable.
Yeah, yeah. And I have no doubt that, for 20 years, he's always taken his medications. I have no doubt that he always will. He's going to be healthy. He's going to be fine. He's going to live his normal lifespan. And that's, most of my patients are very, the specifics are different, but it's all, most of my patients, I've got to this point where if they just take their pills, which they do, they're going to be fine. It's really, from a medical standpoint, I would much rather have HIV than diabetes. from the social standpoint, you know, it's a big difference because, yeah, you know, diabetes, everyone accepts it. But from a medical standpoint, I mean, it's so much easier to treat. And
what do you think our cultural roadblock is? How do we fix that social stigma as a society?
I think it's gradually changing. I have three children who all went to McCaskey, and you know, they don't think twice about, you know, having a classmate who's gay or, you know, different race or ethnicity. You know, they're just very, you know, accepting, you know. And so I think the, you know, the younger generation, you know,
potentially generational.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think for them it's just not that big a deal, you know. I mean, and I think a lot of our social program problems will get better because, you know, we do have so much diversity in the country, and I think there is a lot of acceptance, especially with younger people.
But no, I guess that's true because, you know, I think that the reason that for me it still carries such weight is because I lived through that time.
Yeah, yeah.
How did shifting to comprehensive care change your trajectory as a doctor?
Well, I think it really helped me get my whole, you know, belief in clinical medicine back. One of the good things about these Ryan White grants is that we get a half hour with each patient, which a primary care doctor, you know, if anyone listening and hear me say this, they're going to be, what, a half hour with each patient? Most primary care doctors get 10 to 15 minutes and you rush through and try to do everything and you're just, you go from one room to the next. I get a half hour, which is such a luxury. I get to know people and talk to them. And so there was that part of it, but also, and just, you know, the work was so fulfilling, you know, to see people like, you know, the guy I mentioned get better and be healthy. They appreciate you. You see them every 3 to 6 months, so you have this ongoing relationship. So it's just, I was getting a little burned out on just, you know, seeing patients, you know, very quickly. It just wasn't that satisfying. You know, so much of it is psychosocial stuff that you couldn't get into in 15 minutes. That I think it just really allowed me to feel like, you know, I feel like this is why I went into medicine. You know, I can spend time, get to know people, help people, you know, just feel like I'm doing the right thing. So it was great.
You recently retired. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How many
years
did you practice medicine?
Well, I started residency in 86. So I guess it was, what's that, 34 years?
34 years.
Yeah, 34, yeah.
What's that like?
Retirement?
What's it like to not have to go into the hospital?
I think I can kind of get used to this.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I mean, I retired December 31st, and then, you know, about a week later, I went to Seattle, spent 10 days. One of my daughters just moved to Seattle, so I went there. So I got back from that, and I was a little, you know, sleep deprived. So I just feel like in the last week, I'm kind of getting into it, like a, you know, maybe a bit of a routine. So, you know, I mean, I'm always worried about something. I'm a bit neurotic, I guess, but you know, I'm worried maybe I'll get bored, but so far, it's just been great, you know, to get up in the morning and, like, I've been doing crossword puzzles, which I never did before. I've kind of gotten addicted to those, New York Times crossword puzzle. You know, take the dog for a walk, go to the gym. I started doing woodworking. I told you I got woodworking equipment, and that's like, and I don't really know what I'm doing. So that's like a very steep learning curve for me. I mean, I've hardly done anything. I'm just trying to figure out how to use these machines and stuff. But that, you know, that's fun. I mean, you know, I can just take my time. Yeah, you know, get to spend more time with my wife and son. So, I mean, it's just, I mean, so far it's been good. It's so short though. I just, you know, maybe in 6 months I'll have a different view.
Right. You're still like on vacation.
So far so good.
Where would you want to see medicine go? Where would you want to see this system in the United States move from here?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the right person to be talking to because I don't like the U.S. healthcare system at all. I mean, I'm just very cynical. I mean, I almost think we should tear it down and start over again. But I mean, I, you know, single payer, we definitely need single payer. I mean, we've got to, you know, find a way to, you know, not waste so much money. I mean, one of the big things is, you know, defensive medicine. You know, doctors are so afraid of getting sued, which is a real fear. I've been sued a couple times. It totally sucks. But we waste so much money doing unnecessary testing just so, you know, some lawyer can't say, well, you didn't do everything or, you know, anticipating what could come up in court. It's a lot of waste of money there. I mean, huge amount. It's never been quantified. I just know the way doctors behave and how I behave. It's huge. And then I think we have to, you know, focus a lot more on prevention and, you know, healthier lifestyles and not just, it seems like we really focus on, you know, patching people up when they've gotten real sick and, you know, there's that much more you can do. And you just keep them going with a lot, you know, 20 medications and surgeries and stuff. And it's not just healthcare. It's the whole population, I think, has to, you know, really believe that they have, they should try to adopt a healthier lifestyle, you know, eating better and exercising more, you know, the things, you know, not smoking.
And that can happen, you know. I never believed in the 1990s that we would see a day where I didn't go to a bar and have a cigarette. I think when Bill Clinton was president, there were these rumblings that we're going to eradicate smoking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, there's just, whatever.
Yeah,
right. And then to fast forward 20 years and
there's only like a couple bars that you can smoke now.
Oh, absolutely.
You're like Brendy's.
And, right. Yeah. It's a very rare thing. Yeah, and I mean, just to think that there's no smoking section in restaurants, I never believed that could happen.
Right.
But it's possible.
Yeah.
And so I believe that there could be a shift, you know, toward just health, just a better lifestyle overall. And it wouldn't be a thing that you're choosing, like a diet that you're going on for a period of time. It's just the way it is. It is possible. It's going to take some pretty big shifts, though.
Yeah, the obesity. I mean, there's just so much convenient pre-prepared food available. I mean, you know, every time people socialize, there's food involved, and you know, everyone, you know, we all have cars and hardly exercise, and so I don't know that one. That's going to be
a big shift.
That's going to be a big one. And that's what we really need. I mean,
looking back over your career, do you have a highlight? Is there a favorite thing that you've done in medicine?
You know, being an HIV provider the last 20 years or so, I think that's been the most satisfying thing. Yeah, like the patient I told you, I have so many stories like that. I mean, people that I feel like I've really been useful. You know, to my fellow man, you know, my fellow person. I mean, it's really a good feeling. You know, I mean, I think I could, you know, die someday feeling like, you know, I did something worthwhile, and that, you know, that's a great feeling.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you have a lot of time on your hands these days, but thank you for sharing a little bit of it with me.
Sure, sure.
I really appreciate learning more about comprehensive care and the work you've done. Thank you for everything you've done for this community.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. You're totally welcome, yeah.
The Doers Podcast is produced by Jason Mundock at The Candy Factory,
a co-working space located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Find links and show notes for this podcast and all of our episodes online
at The Candy Factory website,
coworkinginlancaster.com. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
What you love to do.
This is going to be such a success.
Hey friends, Jason Mundock here. All of the voices in our intro and outro are actually Candy Factory members.
Wait, what?
It's a great community, and yes, we have a good time because, frankly, work doesn't have to suck. And we all know that working alone does suck, so if you're a freelancer, entrepreneur, remote worker, or even a student here in Central PA, check out coworkinginlancaster.com and consider joining us at the Candy Factory, an awesome co-working space in Lancaster. Starting at just $50 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's for a community membership. You can meet other doers in a super creative and collaborative space, tap into business resources to help you get your job done efficiently, and learn all kinds of new and inspiring stuff through our network of really smart people, i.e., our members and guests. We even have a podcast club for members who want to make their own.
Wink, wink.
There's a membership level for everyone, so don't hesitate. Check it all out at coworkinginlancaster.com. Do it.
Do it.